Hello, and welcome to the ArborHive Project Podcast, where we bridge the gap between clinical experience and medical innovation. Doctors, nurses, and other healthcare providers are critical to designing the medical technology of tomorrow. Your clinical knowledge is valuable. From planning basics to industry experts, we're here to help you on your journey. So let's get to it. Hello, Nikki Kennedy back here with you again at the ArborHive Project, where once again, we try to bridge the gap between medicine and business. If you recall from our last transmission, we spent some time discussing a variety of jargon to help get you comfortable with business speak. I also asked you to put on your entrepreneur thinking cap as we took a look at things from the perspective of someone starting a business. Today, we're going to hop to the other side of the fence. Instead of thinking like a CEO or a business founder, we're going to think like consultants. Consulting. Say it to yourself a few times. Sounds a little sexy, right? Well, as a surgeon, I know that the thought crossed my mind more than once. I know, I'm a little biased. But think about how many times you, as a clinician, have looked at a medical device and said to yourself, "Wow, if only someone had asked me before they went ahead and made it that way." We've all met with frustration in our work lives when technology fails to help us. In fact, the best example of this may just be three little letters, EMR. No matter which platform you use, the electronic medical record has its benefits and its pitfalls. The next time you log in to document on a patient encounter, make a little list to yourself of all of the things you would change in that software. Fewer clicks, better shortcuts, easier searching. I would only caution you not to spend too much time doing this. You might find that your list can get pretty long. So what if you had the opportunity to fix your EMR pet peeves before they made it to your computer screen? What if that big software company knocked on your door and said, "Hey, would you mind taking a look at what we're doing to see if you like it?" Would you say yes? Well, I sure would. This is the basic concept behind much of the consulting world. Consulting comes in a variety of flavors. It can range from a little pro bono curbside discussion to a full-time paying gig. For physicians, however, I find that a few questions frequently pop up. One is about having time to consult. It's more than just finding 30 minutes out of your week for a phone call. If you aren't connected to groups that are looking for your opinion, you won't have those opportunities. That can translate into much more than a simple phone call by the time you make all of those networking connections. Also, the question of payment comes up. If you plan on getting paid for your time, consulting with a startup may not be the thing for you. These young companies are often on a shoestring budget. Spending $200 to $500 an hour just for the pleasure of your company might be out of their price range, especially if they've never met you prior to that first conversation. Another big question mark is the conflict of interest. Let's save that one until just a bit later. For now, let's start with the most basic idea, that first conversation. As we keep mentioning, your clinical knowledge is a valuable and precious thing. You can pretty much learn how to do accounting and finance with some effort, but it's probably going to be a lot harder for your accountant to learn about appropriate fluid management in cardiogenic shock. What you've learned during your training and with your everyday patient care is difficult to replicate if you're not a clinician. While some startups are founded by physicians, many are not. Even then, a truly great idea may translate into other areas of medicine. A primary care physician and an OBGYN, for instance, may have very different daily tasks. The primary care doc might not be worried about delivering a baby, but she might be very interested in a software system that helps with billing or vaccination tracking. It's possible that the OBGYN has some of these same concerns. If a startup company only talks to primary care providers, they might be missing out on other customer insights from, say, the OBGYN world. Often, companies like to find clinicians from many diverse areas to get different opinions on what they're developing. This helps them to refine their value proposition and to improve on their product. So, what these companies are looking for are clinicians who can not only help them to focus on the problem they are trying to solve, but they're often looking for people with a fresh take on how their solution might apply in other scenarios. Before we go any further, we should give this type of consulting clinician a name: Subject Matter Expert, or SME for short. A subject matter expert is someone like yourself. You have the knowledge from your training and your certifications. You have the expertise from your time spent taking care of patients. You know your stuff. This makes you an SME. This doesn't have to be a full-time job. In fact, you may already be acting like an SME and not even realize it. Have you ever been chatting with a device rep when he asks, "So, what do you like about our product?" Or he may ask you why you didn't use his stuff in a particular case. That vendor is trying to glean a little insight from you that may help him improve his future product line, or at least his sales pitch. You can be a subject matter expert in a variety of ways. That little curbside conversation with your device rep, if you can give him some helpful tidbits, he will probably ask you something else the next time he sees you. After a while, he might ask you for a higher level of input, perhaps a focus group or industry-sponsored training session. This doesn't necessarily mean that you're compensated financially for your advice. In fact, there are some strings attached to some of those relationships. But getting to voice your opinion during that development process may lead to a better product that shows up in your OR a few years later. Or perhaps the training and education you receive in exchange for your time will prove to be valuable for future patient care. The hope is that having a mutual conversation makes the next generation of tools better for everyone. Which brings me to our next big question, compensation. Now, I'm sure that some of you are thinking to yourself, hold up, I'm not getting paid for this, but I'm used to getting X number of dollars per hour when I see a consult in my clinic. And this is true. Your patient care compensation is a pretty cut and dry system. You see a patient, you code it, you send your bill in for it, and you hope you get paid for what you did. Innovation is admittedly not that straightforward. It's a learned process. When you showed up on the hospital ward on your first day out of medical school or nursing school, did they put you in charge of the sickest patient in the ICU? Probably not. And did your manager or your attending believe everything you said about your patients on rounds? Or did they spend a little time double-checking until they trusted you? In the same way, you have to build trust with an industry partner. This may take a few conversations before things start to progress. Over time, your small conversations with different companies might start to grow into something else. Perhaps they will offer you cash for a true consulting position. More often, I've seen clinicians offered spots on a company's advisory board. This may be in exchange for money or for equity in the company. If things are going really well, some companies might ask if you're interested in becoming a medical director for them on a full or part-time basis. That would mean that you would be an actual employee of this company and speak on their behalf. Again, these sorts of relationships take time, so a little patience may be needed. Coming into that first conversation with your handout is usually a good way to not have that introductory meeting. But again, do you trust your junior trainee at his word when you've only had him on your team for 3 days? And especially if you're new to the SME world, it helps if you've talked to a few companies already. With each encounter, you'll get a better feel for the sorts of questions they ask and the types of answers they give you. Remember all that business lingo we talked about in the last episode? If you can incorporate some of those concepts into your answers when you talk to a startup, they will be pleasantly surprised and maybe a little anxious to talk to you again. And don't forget that things work both ways. As you learn more and more about a company, you might find that what sounded like a great idea at first perhaps doesn't hold water as you take a closer look. It's important to remember that your clinical credentials have meaning. Think about it. Why is the old joke, "I'm not a doctor, but I play one on TV," so funny? TV doctors don't know anything. Have you ever watched a TV doctor try to perform CPR on a coding patient? It's pretty hilarious. We all chuckle when we see that, but we don't want to be that. It's hard work to become a certified clinician. You had to study. You had to pass exams. You had to put in your hours. Don't lend your credentials to someone who hasn't earned them. You can offer your honest opinion as an SME, but make sure your reputation isn't on the line if you decide to take that next step and endorse them. We can't make the leap into the compensation discussion without following it up with the elephant in the room: conflicts of interest. Now, I'm a lot of things, but a lawyer, I am not. I will say up front that if you have concerns, you should always check with your attorney before getting involved with the company, especially if they offer to compensate you for your time. Now, with that out of the way, what sorts of concerns might you have? For starters, you may work for a large health system that has all kinds of rules about consulting. Looking at your employment agreement or contract should be your first step. Do you have an exclusive contract with them that requires you to get some kind of permission before doing any outside consulting work? What about the type of consulting you plan to do? If you're an interventional cardiologist and you want to consult for a company about a new cardiac stent they're developing, your health system might be a little alarmed. After all, if you decide to use your influence to advance this company's interests, your employer might worry that you're profiting off of this venture at the expense of their patients. Many health systems require all employees to make an annual disclosure of any conflicts of interest they may have. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't be paid for consulting for a company. I'm only recommending that you check ahead of time to make sure that you're not creating headaches for yourself. It's one thing to offer some free advice. Most health systems are usually okay with those sorts of conversations. It's another thing if you're getting paid for it, and it's a particularly big deal if you use any resources that your employer has provided for you to get paid for another gig. If you tap into your hospital's fancy database to do a little side research for a company, your employer might not be happy. And you should never, ever provide any kind of patient data to a company. That's completely off limits. HIPAA applies to everything inside and outside of your workplace, so please make sure that you keep your consulting advice to best practice standards and generic clinical experience. My personal guideline is to always think like I'm answering an oral board exam. You want to demonstrate your knowledge of the material, but you don't want to get too carried away with detail. If you do find that you like a company and you think you can help them advance with your health system, what do you do? Most systems actually have a process for this. Often, it's called the Technology Transfer Office. Most big health systems and universities have some sort of tech transfer team. Their entire job is to act as a gatekeeper. They regulate the formal communications between the hospital and outside groups like industry partners and research groups. If you ever decide to develop a product idea through your health system, you'll get to know your tech transfer team pretty well. A big part of what they do is to help decide who owns ideas. They understand patents and intellectual property and are usually happy to help sort things out when these opportunities arise. As a clinician, you can act as a champion for your industry partners, but it's usually best if you let someone else do this kind of talking. So you've connected with a startup. You've scheduled your SME discussion with them. Is there anything else you should know before you hop on that call? Well, we should probably mention one more thing, the non-disclosure agreement, or NDA for short. You will probably encounter a few of these along your innovation journey. A non-disclosure agreement is usually not a big deal. It's basically a contract that you sign with a company promising not to reveal any secret sauce ingredients that they might reveal to you during discussions. You should, of course, look it over before signing it, as it is a legal document. Often, a company won't ask you to sign one of these before your initial conversation unless they're really paranoid. It's usually reserved for more advanced conversations where they've already met you and decided that they want to dive a little deeper into your brain. Generally, an NDA says that all conversations and any document review you might have with the company regarding their product ideas or business details are confidential. Now, mind you, I didn't say that your ideas were confidential. Unless you sign a two-way NDA or mutual NDA, they can use what you tell them to develop new product ideas without really having to give you any credit or benefit. The bottom line here is that you shouldn't be afraid of signing an NDA in most cases. Just be mindful of what you say during your conversations. If you decide to give a company a sneak peek of your own killer idea that you've been thinking about developing by yourself, well, you probably shouldn't, unless you have some sort of legal protection. And don't be afraid to request that they make it a mutual NDA if they ask you to sign something. It probably isn't necessary if you're consulting for them on a specific project without adding your own unique content to the discussion, but most startups will honor your request if you ask. Another question that comes up sometimes is, what happens if I screw something up and tell them something that isn't correct? Well, it happens sometimes. You might insist that you read something in a journal and quote them some fact or statistic, but maybe you didn't get it quite right. Most companies are smart enough to do their due diligence. If they're talking to you, there's a good chance they are talking to other subject matter experts as well. Well, at least I hope they would. Again, I usually treat these conversations like a relaxed board exam. You tell them from your knowledge and best practice experience what you think about a problem. As long as there's no true clinical contact, such as recommending medical advice for an actual patient, these conversations probably don't fall under the umbrella of medical malpractice. There is another sort of malpractice coverage for non-clinicians that exists. This is called an errors and omissions policy. The idea is to protect its owner from any potential lawsuits that may come up as a result of a mistake made during professional services. Do you need it? Well, I've found mixed answers in my research. If you're designing a major clinical trial for a startup, it might offer you some protection if you screw something up and the trial fails. If you quote a study incorrectly during an SME interview, it's probably less devastating. Depending on who you ask, E&O policies are relatively inexpensive. I mean, are they cheaper than medical malpractice policies? Yes, I've found that most things in life are cheaper than malpractice insurance. But if you're only doing a few SME interviews that have little or no compensation, they might be overpriced for the risk you're taking on. Again, speaking with your attorney might be a good move depending on your situation. I'm just mentioning it here to kind of get it on your radar. Are there any other potential consulting hazards that we've missed? Well, there are a couple of questions you might want to ask if you do find that a company is willing to compensate you for your time. For instance, if they offer to pay you in cash, they will probably do this through a 1099 tax pathway. If you have a professional corporation for your business, you should probably check with your accountant to see how you should handle this. And if they offer you equity or stock in exchange for your efforts, your accountant will probably need to know what the stock is worth, again, for tax purposes. Think of your own stock portfolio. If you sell a stock, you have to report your capital gains or losses to the government on your tax return. If you don't know how much it was worth when you bought it, that question could get expensive. In the same way, you are getting paid in this case. It's just in shares instead of dollars. You should get a quote of how much those shares are worth at the time you receive them. In the case of an early, privately owned startup, they may not know how much they are worth at first. This is called a pre-money valuation, and it's not an easy thing to determine. If the company isn't ready to give you this value, don't be afraid to negotiate a little if compensation is on the table. The startup knows that this is an important number. If they value your experience and opinion, they'll work with you on this. So, I know these last few transmissions have had some pretty heavy stuff. It can be a lot to digest all at once. Don't worry. You probably won't need to know most of the stuff, at least for a little while. But if you do encounter some of these questions on your innovation journey, I hope that some of these details rise up out of the mists for you and help you to navigate through those situations. Again, if you're not sure what to do, ask somebody for help. I have to tell you, my accountant is much smarter than myself, thank goodness. He does a pretty good job of putting stuff on my radar whenever I update him on my current situation. Same thing with my attorney colleagues. Find people you trust. The internet is a great resource, but we all know what happens when patients start Googling their medical conditions. Don't make that same mistake. I'm sure you're probably getting a little tired of listening to me drone on about all of this dry technical stuff. So, let's mix things up a bit. During our next few transmissions, I'll feature some guests who actually do these things for a living. They'll share some personal stories and experiences about some of the topics we've discussed so you can start to put these puzzle pieces together. I mean, after all, isn't the case presentation always more interesting than the regular textbook? Uh-oh, did I just say we're going to have some live examples of subject matter experts on this podcast in the future? Could I have planned that segue better? I'll admit I might have done that on purpose. Until next time, my friends, I'm Nikki Kennedy for the Arbor Hive Project. Thanks for joining me today. Thank you for listening to the Arbor Hive Project podcast. If you enjoyed our transmission, please be sure to subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and your other favorite listening platforms. We also appreciate all of your likes, shares, and comments. To learn more about what we do and to get involved in our innovation network, please be sure to visit us at www.arborhive.com, where you can find links to our weekly updates, monthly newsletter, and our companion blog, The Lonely Surgeon, Navigating the Murky Waters of the Business of Medicine. And please consider joining our innovation network and becoming a part of our growing movement of medical providers who are looking to partner with innovators. Together, we strive to make the future world of medicine a better place. Before we let you go, we should mention the usual disclaimer that this podcast and the Arbor Hive Project does not represent medical or legal advice, and that you should always consult a professional. Arbor Hive has no financial affiliations with any of the services or guests who appear on our show. Thank you again for your time. Keep thinking outside of that box, and we'll see you next time.